How did you get to thinking like you do? And I'm Ginny Witt, and that kind of officially starts us. I don't know whether we're even going to be able to tape this or not. This is a workshop, and my job is workshops. And I see that as being kind of different from a seminar or a lecture or something like that where I have it to you. When we talk about how do we get to thinking like we do, one of the things we are all probably aware of is that when you're born, you really aren't born with a set of beliefs, values, opinions, ideas. All of those things happen to you from the outside. So I work a lot with people who are involved in working with other people. Some things that we get from outside, we can pick up a book and read, or we can learn from a movie, something like that. A workshop is unique in that it provides a way for all the people who are there to do some things together for learning. I have another 2 months, I'll have like 55 years of experience, life experience. And I don't mean to belittle that, but if you take all the life experience of everyone in this room, you can see how we have it all multiplied. So that's kind of what I'm about. When I work with groups, I like to kind of agree before we start, so you know how I work. You can respond if that's okay with you, if you'd like some changes. Participation in a workshop, and that's simply what I told you before. I see a workshop as being different. I see that as being a place where we work together. So if someone comes to a workshop, I kind of assume they want to participate. Voluntariness, no one is to be coerced into doing anything that they do not choose to do. So you always have the option to say pass. If there's something you're not comfortable in sharing, just say pass. And that's perfectly okay with me. If you want to ask me questions about anything at all you want to, I can say pass too. I don't want to convince them. We're all responsible in a workshop. I cannot force learning on anyone. Learning is something that the learner chooses. So suggest that if you have any needs in learning, if we're doing something here and you think, I don't get that, I don't know why they did that, or I don't know what that's about, you take the responsibility and say, hey, slow down for a minute. What did you say? Or I didn't hear you. Or roll that through again, something like that. Also, for your behavior, if you have any personal needs, if you need to get up to go to the dining hall early, or if it's too cool for you and you have to go get a sweater or whatever, by all means, take care of your own needs. Risk. I believe, I've got a bias about learning that says if I'm willing to take a risk, even if it's a 5%, 10%, try doing something I haven't done before. I have a better chance of learning. So for me, risk is kind of involved with growth. And I would suggest that this might be a very safe place to try out something that you haven't tried out before. Openness, a two-way street. One, that you are willing to listen to other people, where they're coming, what their experiences have been. And that you're also willing to share, hey, this is how it is with me. Sensitivity is just good manners. That as we work with one another, we're sensitive to the needs of others. I might say that usually the workshops that I do are 4 or 5 hour workshops in a day. And to try to lift out one little piece of that for an hour here, I'm not quite sure how that's all going to go together, because I generally sort of stop and work with whatever's going on in the group. So today that may be a bit cumbersome, and I have more to talk about today than I usually do in a workshop. So bear with me and give me some feedback afterward, and then if I do this again during the time we're holding all this expert information. First of all, I just want you to get into a quick activity, if you will. Around the room, there are 4 signs. Back there is one that says small town. There is one that says suburb. There is one that says rural. And here is over here one that says city. I think all of us would probably fall in one of those categories. And I'd like for you to think about perhaps where you spent your growing years, which one of those kinds of places. And I'd like for you to go over and stand under a sign that is a place different from where you grew up. In other words, don't stand under the sign which would say, like, if I lived on a farm, I could stand under any of the other 3, but not under rural. And if you will do that, when you get in those spots, I'll hit on the thing again, and I'll give you the next instruction. And just kind of cluster around. If one person will take a pencil, and there's some yellow sheets on top of a red book, and one person just record things, and I'll give you the instruction. If there's one area that doesn't have many people and you could make a choice, maybe we can just kind of even it out. All right? How are you doing? Back here, is there anyone from here who would be willing to go to small town? Oh, okay, you're going to do your own list up there. All right, are you ready for the instruction? What I'm going to do is the leader, and I think this is something that we ought to be aware of, that the leader often gives permission. And I'm going to give you permission to kind of gossip. You know, it's okay, I'm giving you permission, saying it's okay. What I would like you to do is have one person take that red book that has the paper on it, and I'm going to give you only about 3 minutes time, and all of you just give as many impressions. For instance, city. I'd like for everyone under the sign city, you're quite a few here, maybe you could even out a couple more, over here in the world, so we work together. Write down as many things about city people and what it meant to live in the city that you grew up with. When you heard about city people, what did people say about that? How did you imagine city people? Doesn't have to be true, just what did you hear? What were the ideas that were passed along to you about city people? A question on that? After you once get going, I think you'll sort of piggyback on one another's ideas. Over here, you will get all the things that you've heard about farmers, people who live on farms. Write them down as fast as you can. Back here, write about people who live in the suburbs. And over there, people in small towns. Okay, you got about 3 minutes. A person who lived on a farm or in a rural area, okay?
Dumb, know everyone and everyone's business, healthy, friendly, wholesome, close-knit, clumsy, hard-working, deprived, early to bed, early to rise, self-reliant, ambitious, dependent on nature, love the land, simple lifestyle, hayseed square, backwards.
How many of you were raised on farms or rural area? How'd that sound to you? Generally, there's something about that they always want rain, and one person said once in workshop, why do people think the farmers always want rain? Sometimes we get too much rain. You know, when it rains, I'll say it's good for the farmers. Okay, next one. Let's go to the one over here of people who live in the city. Who has that list?
I have that.
All right.
Okay. Place where sin was, minorities. However, they thought there were more opportunities for kids to do things. People there had more money, there was noise, congestion, very impersonal, lots of crime and gang. And there was a lot of nightlife for adults with someone else that was thin, ignorant of rural ways, and yet tried to be very sophisticated.
Okay, how many city people here?
Two. Both, I hate to tell you.
That's all right.
A lot of people I know in city.
A lot of people will have spent, you know, placing.
Yeah.
All right, the other one, how about suburbs? Who has that list?
Okay. Commuters, snobby, wasps, isolated, private schools, privacy, bedroom community, inner city escapees, mechanized housewives.
Okay, no white swappers on that list. That's one that often turns up. White swappers. Oh! All right, how many are suburban? A few of you, okay. All right, the last one around there, the one on small town.
No chores to do in comparison to the rural. Conservative, gossipers, caring, supportive, community, school, church, and sports oriented, cliquish, suspicious, slow paced.
Thank you. We'll get back to what we were doing when we did those lists now in just a moment. I'm going to be talking for a few minutes yet, and I don't quite know how to shorten this, but in doing presentations over a long number of years, I found that one of the ways in which I can get across the kind of things I want to say in the smallest length of time is through the model of parent-adult-child, people who have read I'm okay, you're okay, or know something about I hate to even use the word transactional analysis because those are two great big words, and the reason I choose it is because it's a very simple way of talking about why people do the things or how people do the things they do. And to get some kind of an understanding where we can use the same words and talk to one another about it. There'll be about five words that I'm going to be using in this presentation. Parent, adult, child, strokes, and I've already forgotten the other one. The one thing to remember is when I talk about these, I'm going to talk about them in perhaps an enlarged way or a little different than you may have used the word in your own vocabulary. So I'd like for you to keep that in mind. And Judith is going to help me putting up some things visually here. The idea behind the parent, adult, child is that everyone has three parts to their personality. They are the parent part, the adult part, and the child part. And it isn't just dependent on how old you are. We all have, according to Eric Byrne, who uses this, and I like it. It's a way in which it's clear for me. So that the idea of parent, that's all the things that we have been taught. The child are the things that we have felt. Let me just move it on into the next one. We'll go rather quickly on this. The first one is probably the most important one for this presentation to get some ideas on. The idea of the parent, if you begin to think about a recording tape, something being recorded, and now they have tapes that have several tracks on them, that on one of the tracks, if you think about from the very moment that you were born, you came into this world, that parent tape of yours started to run within you. And that you began to receive from the world outside you all of the taught things that you have needed in order to grow up and become a part of a person in the society. So if you think about parent messages or that parent tape as being all the things outside yourself that are taught, one thing that we think of with parent, that's where you begin to learn the rules for living. All of the shoulds, all of the should nots, all of the ought tos, things that will keep you safe. There are many, many messages that keep coming to you from the very time you're born. These figures that I did in stick figures here, the small one for a child, if a child when they're born weighs 10 pounds, which is a pretty good sized child, and 24 inches long, if the father is 150 pounds and 72 inches, which would be 6 feet tall. Now, if you go the next comparable number, if I'm 6 foot tall and I look at someone who's three times bigger than I am, which is what the small child would to that father, I'm talking about someone that would be like 450 pounds and 18 feet tall. Now, if I'm standing here looking at that, we begin to get some kind of notion of how very, very significant to those of us who are small are those people around us who are the big people. So that those tapes, when they start recording, really are not monitored, or they're everything comes in just as the tape is going. And you can begin to see how those people who are the big people in our lives are very significant. Okay. In that, of the parent, if you take a look at it, think of the parent in two ways. One, that there is the parent who is nurturing, and the parent who is either critical or influential. Two parts to what happens with the parent. The very fact that everyone here is in this room today is evidence that you have had a nurturing parent. You wouldn't have made it without a nurturing parent. Not only just to be fed, but in Children's Memorial Hospital in Chicago, they have some very interesting films of children who have been brought into the hospital who receive no holding, a very little physical touch. And those children have just failed to develop. They didn't grow, and it was not being nourished with food. It was a matter of that they were deprived of being held and hugged and all. So when we talk about that part of the parent that's nurturing, they are the part that protects, rocks, hugs, feeds, bathes, kisses, loves. All that is important for any of us to grow. And in fact, we're here, I would say we all have that. The critical or influential parent is that part that sort of gets us ready to move out into society. We have to learn how do we live with other people. So from them we get the rules, we get threats, when things, you know, like if you don't pick up your clothes, you cannot go out, you must eat your food, clean your plate, all those things. The critical parent would be the one who is judgmental, could be punishing, admonishes, teaches, demands, not totally negative. If any of you have had children in your home where there has been none of the critical parent, you probably have not wanted that child around very long if they jumped off your couch and wrote on the walls with crayons and all those things. Okay, move on then. Oh, put this one on the first page. I got it. Hurt. That parent in this instance is not just a mother-father. Could be any of the significant people who are around. For some of us, that may have been older brothers and sisters in the family, grandfathers, grandmothers, teachers, pastor. Television has been a fantastically strong parent message giver to children today. What they do is, if you see, when children are very small, or when any of us were small, we just sort of accept as true what comes from that before we begin to get discriminating about it. There are institutional parent messages. Can you give me an idea of what maybe what might be an institutional message in the Lutheran Church? Any religious message? Maybe even negative.
Church attendance.
You have to,
message.
Okay.
You must attend church.
Or maybe for some of us, Lutherans are better than Catholics,
yes.
Could be. Lutherans are right, Catholics worship God. You know, there's a lot of things around that institution, or the school that I belong to is the best school. Our government on this one, right or wrong, you know, our government is right, others might be wrong. Family messages sometime. What do you think the message would have been for those who were in the Kennedy family, President Kennedy and his family?
Excel.
What? Excel.
Be a winner.
Be a leader.
Yeah.
Be a winner. Okay, and those were very real messages that the whole family got. Now, how they got those would be interesting to find out, whether they were verbal, nonverbal, but they sure took. Messages in the church. Methodists are the best, whatever. Racial messages, things that talk about my race and talk about other people's race. Sexual messages, child that may grow up in a home where there has been a divorce could somehow, whether it was even intended or not, pick up messages saying, don't trust men, or sometimes don't trust women, or women are this, men are that kind of thing. So those, as we get all that information, and then parent information yields, it can come from many of those places. We get those by words, nonverbal, by the tone of voice, by the actions that we have, and those are very powerful. Would you all do this with me? Hold your hand like this, with the fingers straight up. Okay. Form like this. All right. And I want you to take this and put it on your cheek. What was more powerful?
What you did.
Yeah. The nonverbal are much more powerful than the verbal messages. The tone of voice. And when we get into double messages, and this is where things can get terribly confusing for us, someone may give a message with words, and in their voice will sound differently. Like somebody might say, who's angry? I'm not angry. Well, what you're catching is not only the voice or the words. You know, that's almost negated. And we'll be doing some more then. We'll do a couple of communication sessions. Use all that material in the day. The tough ones are the injunctions, and those are the straight messages that are given over and over that will say, like, don't trust men, don't mingle with people of a different race, stay with your mother, she's the only one who might be with you that you can trust, don't grow up, and that can be done in ways of saying, you know,
kind of stay dependent on me. Those are very tough messages to have to undo. Any other questions about parent messages at this point? Would you close your eyes for just a minute and try to think of yourself when you were around 5 years old? And can you think of someone who had some kind of a parent message? Something that you heard over and over and over that was a saying or cliche or something that came from someone who would be in that parent category. Okay, anybody got one? All right, wait just a minute. Will you use the same tone of voice and the gestures when you say it? See if you can.
Now, don't eat the paste.
Teacher?
Yeah.
Okay. Did you notice what her gesture was?
Yeah.
That's most any time someone's like this, they're operating in that area of parent. Okay, another?
You're a ruse. Ruse don't act.
Uh-huh.
Where's my mother's?
And what would be her, what would be sort of the body language of that? Would be sort of standing upright?
The tone of voice.
All right, the tone of voice. Great.
These are kinder. Huh? These kids.
What was that, mother?
My mother.
Your mother. Was it just sort of a strong message in voice? Was there any physical?
Right, you knew that she was angry.
Yeah. Okay. Anyone else have one?
How many times have I told you not to cross the tracks?
Oh, boy. Anytime you hear the how many times have I told you? That's a great one. I've been doing this kind of thing for about 8 years with people from all different races. And there's one message that keeps coming up, not in every workshop, but I found that it is universal. And that is, eat all the food on your plate. People in somewhere are starving.
My son would say, name one.
But it's kind of a neat universal one. And then there's another one that's a close second, and it says, don't wear that underwear with holes in it. What if you get in an accident?
You all heard that one.
All right. Any other things around parent? Is it sort of clear what we're talking about with the parent messages? Our tapes have all been running. We've been taking things in. Okay. At the same time that that tape recorder is bringing in the things from outside, it is also recording the kind of feeling response that comes from within. So the parent are the taught things. The child part of that, down at the bottom of those three, are the felt things. So that all of the emotions of joy, anger, fear, hate, excitement, our creativity, there's not a value judgment on any of that in terms of all some are good or it's all good or all bad. Sometimes we have the feeling that those are not the greatest because we think of them as being childish. I'm not talking about childish, I'm talking about childlike. And so all the feelings of love and emotion are in that part of us that is the child. I figured out once, and I didn't bring that with me and I've forgotten, that from the time that we're born, I tried to figure out, according to my kids, they were toilet trained at approximately 2 years, and I figured how many diapers a day, and for 2 years' time, we got into the thousands of them. But when you think that a child is laid down, picked up, diaper stuck underneath, their feelings, response, how the child is touched, how they're moved, all of those kind of things are recorded in terms of feelings. So,
how they're talked to.
Yes, yes. Around that, I'll get back to those other things in the bottom later. Have any of you had the experience of being frightened by a dog when you were very young, that you were really frightened? Back there in here? How do you feel about dogs now?
If they're real big, like the one I was scared by, I still get that. But I don't want to get near them.
But Cheryl, you know that's ridiculous. You know all dogs aren't like that. Well, I can tell Cheryl that, but that really doesn't take care of her feeling response. When we have really some kind of an initial feeling, then the feelings beyond that kind of hook onto it like a chain. And there are times when we can get back, right back into that kind of feeling. You have had experience too?
Same thing.
Do you, have you
I respect dogs. I love them. But I'm always trying to outguess the dog.
Okay, so there's something that goes on with you. How many of you have ever almost drowned when you're in a swimming pool or in a lake? Same one? Auntie, you're great in a workshop. How do you feel about swimming?
I can swim barely because I was learning how to swim. I was in high school. And someone pushed, the first thing you did was tread water, you know, yeah. And someone pushed somebody else in and they grabbed onto my neck and they got them out and forgot me down the pond. And so consequently, up to that point, I've learned to do the side stroke. And that's the only one I've ever learned to do. I can't put my face under water. I've tried and tried and taken lessons and everything and it doesn't work.
Okay.
And every time I'm in a body of water, I go down and see if I can touch the bottom. That's one of my first things I check out.
I'm with you on that. Fear is an emotion that we can intellectualize it, we can think about it, we can try to talk it through, but that doesn't change what that gut reaction is if it's been a very fearful experience.
My back broken by a wave of the ocean, and I was fully grown. I was newly married, in fact. But, you know, I didn't even look at waves.
Another kind of thing that might be, thank you, thunder, lightning. Any of you were frightened by that, by a very real storm over here?
We always had to get up at night. You know, I mean, Dennis would tell the story. My mother would get up and pretty soon she'd have my dad up and pretty soon we'd all be up and downstairs sitting by the door. And sometimes we had to go to the basement and sometimes we lost trees too, but to this day, when it lightens, I'm up, I'm looking out every window.
Do you find yourself repeating that kind of thing with your own children?
No, I try not to wake anybody else up. I go downstairs and do something so that I leave everybody else alone, but I look out every window to just try to check it out.
Okay, thank you. Well, you kind of got the point of what those emotions are. And that can be involved in a lot of the senses. I walk past if there's a bakery or something with cinnamon, and I smell cinnamon and sugar, that takes me right back to Saturday afternoon when my mother was baking. And it's just a great, great kind of a feeling. For some, it might be the experience of having felt just wonderful in spring or some very positive, joyful experiences at some time. Maybe if you were a child and really loved going to church, you still have some of the same kinds of joyful. If you were taken out and whipped three or four times, you may have have to really work at feeling a positive thing when you go on, and it seems like, I don't want to make those all too absolute, but I just want you to see all the possibilities. Okay, we're ready to move on then to the last one, the adult. Now the adult, rather than being a tape recorder that is recording those things that are taught and felt, it's more like a computer. It gathers information about the things that are happening here and now. It analyzes it. It reality tests things. We make decisions. We ask questions. We update information. As we grow, and most people in the field of behavior say this happens when we're about 10 years old, that adult part of us that starts asking questions, making its own decisions, taking the material that they got from up here in the parent, the feelings with the child, but bringing in all new kinds of information. One that is very real for me is that it was an almost nonverbal thing, but there was a very strong message that women who smoke were somehow not really. Absolutely. And maybe because it wasn't spelled out too much, it had a very, very strong impact. And there was kind of almost a judgment made if someone smoked, the kind of person that they'd be. One of the things, I guess, that I learned and I had to go through was when I was with people who smoked, was trying, and I got to know them, realized they didn't fit that. That information didn't fit that person. And so I had to take a look at it and say, hey, the new information is there are people who smoke and they're really okay people. So smoking isn't all that bad. Now, in updating that, I think the message that I've given to my kids is saying smoking's dangerous to your health. So it's kind of moving from a don't smoke, smoking's okay, to smoking's not okay, but for different reasons, updating. And so that's what the adult does, is it takes new information, puts it with the ones that you had before and makes some decisions, sort of tests it out. If a mother says to a kid, you know, you go to school and you should put on your rubbers, it might rain today, and the kid says, I don't want to take my rubbers, and comes home and it's soaking wet and in puddles, that's reality testing. It may make a decision, mother was right or mother wasn't right, but they have tested it out. One of the things that the adult also can help us with is to ask questions. You know, where did that information come from? Is it appropriate? Is it true? Does it apply? So that questioning would be, I think, a very positive kind of thing, taking a look at that bunch of messages. One more here, a mess. Now, this would be the model of the parent-adult child, where if, for instance, I refuse to look at anything that is new, I want to hold on to all of the old myths, all of the old things that I learned. And it's a nice, secure kind of way. This is how it's always been. This is the thing that I'm going to do. This is how I'm going to do it. And not change one bit, even though things around me might change. I will become kind of frozen in terms of my life. However, there is a kind of security about that. What will happen then is these parent messages really move into the adult area and kind of contaminate it. When they move down here, when we refuse to check new information, then this part of the adult here becomes contaminated. And same here with the child. If we hang on to the fears to such an extent that we're not willing to work on that, fear moves up, and pretty soon this area becomes contaminated and does not function well. Now that's the model that I use for prejudice. And what you were doing before could be sort of a way of thinking about prejudices. You were getting all kinds of messages. Somehow you'd all heard those messages written about small towns, suburbs, cities. Those were all messages. Now, if you held on to any of those and said, boy, those are absolute truth, with no question, you would have a lot of this part of the adult contaminated. If you had fears around that and didn't identify them as fears, I understand, you know, you're knowing about swimming, that though you have that fear, you are not saying that'd be true for everyone. If you did, that would contaminate the adult. Is that clear? Okay, I work with a lot of people who are visible minorities. And with visible minorities, when we are very easy to put into boxes, like the suburb, city, and so forth, work with a lot of police officers. Police officers are visible minorities. When people see a police officer, the first thing they do is they pull out of their whole bag of myth-like things that they've heard out of police officers and sort of can attach it to that police officer if they don't know him. And therefore, we often go around and we look at a police officer, instead of kind of clearing the computer and starting at zero, we go back and take all that information that's been jumbled up in there, and we're not even asking questions, is this still true? Or is this true for this person? Visible minorities are certainly much more often become the target of the kind of prejudice that happens here. You have something to say?
What are some other examples of visible minorities?
Well, would be someone who'd be Chinese, Japanese, someone who may be handicapped. What we can tend to do is kind of attach from all of that experience and information. One of the ways in which we function well is we kind of group information so that we don't have to think everything through from beginning to end each time we get into a situation. And then I begin to sometimes apply and say, well, if this is this, then so-and-so is true, and make a jump, which really isn't accurate, and then attach some of those old messages to a new situation. And I guess the thing that I'd like to challenge is say, give that adult a chance to look and say, is this material still accurate? Is it still true? Be glad to spend more time on that. I got a couple things I want to do. I know I'm rushing through on this, but a couple things I want to do yet. Here's one that I use too. That's the other thing, the other idea, is savings stamps. I think it's kind of a neat idea. Savings stamps are the way in this way of thinking that we might think about feelings that we have and how we're going to handle those feelings. If, for instance, I have had a strong message that has come to me from all along the line, and I've grown up with sort of a message that says, blacks are lazy, colored people are lazy. I get on the train to go to work in the morning, and there may be 20 people who are in my car at the train who are black. And I look around, and three of them really look like they're lazy. Now, they aren't well-dressed, they seem to have no... So I look at three of them, and I go, And I put three stamps in my book. I may read an article in the paper that has something about some person who is black, who offended in this kind of a way, broke the law, stole, whatever. Another one in my book. And I keep doing that. I really look for the people who fit that picture that I have. And then, when I have my whole book full of savings stamps, I can have a free hate with no guilt. Now, you may take that and apply it to other kinds of things. I might feel the same way about ALC Lutherans, LCA Lutherans, Missouri Lutherans. You know, we begin to get like a full book. And then do that kind of a shortcut that when I meet someone like that, all I have to do is go back to my book. And I want to push back to that point of saying, is it possible? Can we work at setting our computers back to zero? I understand people who program computers. When they've done something on a computer, they have to set it back to zero before they do another computer program. And perhaps if we could think in those terms so that we did not use so much of these old tapes. And some of those old tapes are good. I think I got some really good tapes, and I would hope that your children have received, or if you're young, that you're a child who received good, or a parent that you've been able to pass along those beliefs and values. Not going to even talk about that today. Another interesting area is to take that parent and follow the values that are passed along through tapes and the beliefs. Saving stamps, is that clear enough? Okay, we've got the last one here. Have you heard the word strokes before? It's almost been adopted into language. A stroke is just some kind of a recognition that you're alive. You know, I might yell at you, but you know you're alive if I've yelled at you. If I see you in the morning and I smile, I nod my head, say hello, any recognition that I am alive, it becomes a stroke for me. Now, there are plus strokes and there are minus strokes. And since we all need strokes to stay alive, I would rather have minus strokes. Okay, here, it'll be minus. I'd rather have minus strokes than no strokes at all. Sometimes children who are deprived of positive strokes adapt the kind of behavior that they do to just get strokes of any kind. Also, we learn to do things related to our strokes. What kind of things are little girls stroked for? Pardon?
Keeping clean.
Keeping clean.
Acting like ladies.
Acting like ladies.
Play with dolls.
Play with dolls.
Don't yell.
Don't yell.
Keep
your legs crossed.
Just my age.
My brother patent you. Helping mother make cookies. Helping mother make cookies. Any other? All right, what kind of strokes do little boys get?
Being rough and tumble.
Rough and tumble?
Play sports.
Being good at sports.
Good at sports.
Never cry.
Never cry.
Brave.
Brave. Those are all messages that come very, very early in life and follow up. And we often have a whole stack of those to work through. I guess a hopeful thing. We can't turn those tapes off. Once they have gone, they're there. And we can't erase them. I shouldn't say you couldn't turn them off. They can't be erased, but we can turn them off. And it is by the kind of questioning
And also, I believe that it is down in that child part of us that we can, through some emotional experience, maybe if I get to know someone else, that is powerful enough to help me alter that tape. Okay? All right, now I'm going to ask, have any questions around where that was going? What I generally do with this, we do a lot of things about with people who are, you know, a Black, a Chicano, Hispanic, Latino, American Indian, we just get a whole wide range. It's a little more difficult to do the kind of thing here that I did there, but I see that we do have two rather distinct divisions, one in that we have both men and women here, and I wonder if there's some woman who would come up and some man who would volunteer for, I think, kind of a, it won't hurt too much, and would be, someone who maybe would be willing to risk just a bit. We have two volunteers. All right. You may be too well important for this, but I'll let you.
Well, I might be, yeah.
Anybody else?
I think.
Anybody else want to fit? I'll tell you why.
Yeah.
Anybody else willing to volunteer? Okay, great. Sit down here. Now I need a woman to sit here.
I'll go.
Now I need two more. Another man, another woman. You're loved. Alright. I usually do this with like black and white. Gee, I'm trying to think of the situation. I thought of this while I was in bed the other night, and I don't remember that I wrote it down. Okay. In your church, you're both part of a congregation whose pastor's gone, and you're now in a meeting where they're calling a new pastor, and the two of you have pulled off over to the side and are talking about it, and you have a woman's name on your list. How's that for a dandy situation? All right, now you are to say things. You are to try to think what women would say. And you're to try to think what men would say in that conversation. So you're a man talking to this woman about calling a pastor, and there's a woman's name on the list, and you're talking about that. Now your role is, if she says something that you think wouldn't say, you tap him on the shoulder.
It depends on the pH of the woman.
Well,
that's the choice.
Anything, you know, just do it. And if she says something, you say, no, men wouldn't do that. It's just not anywhere near. You tap her on the shoulder. Okay? So, okay. You're looking at the call list and you see that woman.
Why shouldn't we have a woman just as intelligent as men?
Some of you have questions. Come and stand in back here and get married.
Yeah, what if she gets pregnant?
Well, that's impossible because I'm single.
Quiet in the church.
She's definitely. Apostle Paul wrote that, that was a whole different time, a different world, and a different culture. And things are so different now that that would really be irrelevant to the problem.
Do you think she could stand all these meetings and be as strong as a man?
Statistically proven that women are the stronger sex. Fewer illnesses, fewer colds.
Live longer. What if we don't want to keep her? What if she doesn't prove to be a good pastor?
Well, that could happen to a man, too, on that basis, who would just suggest that he accept another call.
Okay, this is, I haven't seen anybody tap on the shoulder. So I'd like to give a great people, thank you.
I lied a lot.
You don't believe what you
said. The thing I said there that I believe.
The value of that is putting yourself into thinking as somebody else would think.
It's hard to do.
It is very hard to do. Yeah.
Well, I was going to say, I was having a little trouble because we have an intern pastor who is a woman. And we've learned to love her, see?
Have there been some of the questions raised that were of the kind?
Well, there were those who didn't think a woman, that they could accept a woman in the pulpit. And a friend of mine said to her the first Sunday she preached, "I never thought women should be in the pulpit, but you've made a believer of me." And she said, "I didn't think that they should be in the pulpit either at one time." Yourself.
And what you're dealing with there are really a lot of either are cultural or religious, or and the religious messages that we have are some of the very most powerful because they are like God says. And those of us who, you know, try to shore up everything that we do with Bible passages under it, or somehow say, you know, I got this directly from God, kind of cut the conversation because it's very hard for me to keep a conversation going. In a way, when you said the Bible says no, you know, that's kind of a shutdown. So you may want to be aware of that if you want to keep conversation going. Think about where those messages came from, and are they
also
valid?
Are they valid?
Are they valid?
A lot of them are thinking about that.
I have about 5 minutes to five. I have no compulsion to have to start something new. I'd be delighted if anyone would like to just comment on some of the things that we got into here. Relate your own experiences.
Some unexamined parent tape that my mother-in-law runs
okay.
At the age of 83. My father always said that you must wear shoes at all times, something on your feet at all times, because you will step on a nail and you will get, and it isn't tetanus, it's something else, there's something wrong. It's not the right one. It's something totally different. I'll say diphtheria, isn't it? She's 83 years old. She never has gone barefoot in her entire life, including getting out of bed in the morning. She has her slippers right there. She puts her slippers on. She goes to the bathroom. She sits on the bed or a chair to change her shoes so that her feet never touch the floor or the ground.
We have a lot of those tapes that are still operating. One thing that I would like to suggest to you, and one of the persons I was in training with who does a lot of work in this, said you can kind of check yourself whether you're coming out of a parent tape or a child tape if your response is within 4 seconds. Now, if there's something and you respond to it within 4 seconds, you're probably operating out of a tape, old tape response. Now, that's no absolute. I watch that for myself once in a while. And one of the ways in which, if you're trying to monitor yourself, if you think you've got a lot of old tapes, is to count to 10 before you answer something. Really slow down that process. So some of those old tapes are great. You really want to hold on to them. Yeah.
I was thinking when you were saying that it's wise to be able to clear your computer, your adult part, you know, to zero. And that often comes by knowing somebody that you've had a stereotype about and they destroyed it. I was thinking, isn't knowing Jesus the best way to destroy those stereotypes and to be able to set your adult back at zero each time you meet a new situation or a new person, because he's the one that frees us more than anybody else can from, you know, the negative things in our life.
And those things that are stereotypes, where we talk about people as they, the first really close friend that I had who was black made it impossible for me ever again to say they. Because even if every other one in the world were what the stereotype I had, that one person that I know, and that happened, and it often does, through something that involves the emotions. Our emotions are about the strongest thing we have going for change. What is the thing that's hardest to get used to in a new liturgy? The words of the music.
Music.
Sure. The music is emotional. And people, you can change all kinds of the other wording, but you change the melody to my song. That hits me where things are really tied in very close with my feelings.